Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
I love what Angela was talking about with the dreams. It just, this phrase kept popping into my mind that I heard many years ago. Our dreams are waiting for us to come true. I always thought that was a great statement. A friend of mine made that up, one of our ministers. I love that. Most of the time, the things that we talk about here on Sunday are fairly upbeat. We talk about life and prosperity and courage and all these wonderful things, and occasionally even inspirational, if I do say so myself. But sometimes there are things we need to talk about that are a little more difficult, because life is not always sunshine and lollipops, like 9/11 and things like that. Okay, sometimes life hurts. Sometimes it's painful. Sometimes it's messy. But the false optimism that some people do in this kind of teaching, it's all good, it's all good. No, it's not, sweetheart. Look around. Sometimes it's not, okay? That kind of false optimism that gets blended in with this kind of teaching sometimes gets in the way. Sometimes it doesn't help. Now, I don't mean we should go around worried all the time about all sorts of stuff and expecting the worst, but sometimes thinking ahead about the fundamental questions of life that we're all going to be facing someday simply by nature of being spiritual beings, having a human experience, it might just allow us, if we think about it a little bit ahead of time, to be more prepared when they finally happen. So the title of my talk today is How to Say Goodbye. And I took that title from a small book that my teacher, Dr. Kennedy Schultz, wrote back about 25 years ago, I think. I was looking at the date. It came from a talk that he had done back then. And it's about the process that we all go through when someone that we love dies. All right? Now, I've spoken before about death. I've talked about facing our own physical mortality and what it is and what we think about the afterlife and all that kind of stuff, and about making the transition from the world that we know to the next level of consciousness that we really don't know anything about, all right, which is really what happens when we die. And there's a lot of concerns we need to sort of face and maybe overcome when we're looking at our own mortality, and having a solid spiritual foundation helps. But in a lot of ways, I think all of us would admit that losing someone we love is probably more painful and more difficult than dealing with our own death. Wouldn't you say? It's a whole lot harder, okay? I know over the last year, several of you personally, I know, have lost some fairly recently. How many people in here have lost someone you loved, a friend, a family member, whatever, in the last year? Quite a few. Look at that, in a year. How about in the last 2 years? Okay, so it's something that's relevant to all of us. I was thinking back the other day, I lost 4 friends in the last year, people I knew very, very well, which is, you know, not unusual as you start to get a little bit older, okay? So if it's only been a year or so, or a month, or whatever it happens to be, the pain is still there, all right? That's part of the process. But even if it's been years, whenever we think about the people that we loved and lost, there's sort of a bittersweet feeling. A certain amount of sadness is always there, even if we've moved on. Not because we're worried about where they are or what they're doing, because we know that they're off wherever we all go, doing whatever we're all going to be doing. We know that, okay? But we miss them. We miss them. We physically miss them. We miss hearing their voice. We miss touching them. We miss hugging them. We miss seeing their smile. We miss them. You know, in a way, it's very similar to the pain that we felt back when we were teenagers and starting to date and, you know, falling in love with people and stuff like that. Whenever our heart got broken and somebody dumped us, you know, that feeling, in a way it's like that, though on a much greater scale. One minute someone was there gazing into our eyes, and the next minute we're looking at an empty chair and an open door. That kind of stuff, you know? And we all went through this as teens. And at the time, people would tell us, oh, well, you know, everything's going to be all right. It's all for the best. And the one I really love, it is better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. But when we do that, even with the best of intentions, we're not fooling anybody, especially ourselves, because those are head solutions to something and losing someone we love is not a head problem, right? It's a heart problem. It's a heart problem, okay? Because it's pain so deep that we can't even find the words to describe it. And we can't avoid it because it's there. We can't ignore it. We may try to numb it. A lot of people do that with drugs or alcohol or overwork or, you know, dating somebody else right off the bat, anything. But that doesn't help for very long. All we can do is go through it knowing that in spite of the pain that we feel, at some point in the future, we're going to be able to love again. We just have to know that. I mean, if you think about it, the whole grieving process, which is really what we're talking about, is very, very different today from what it was maybe 100 years ago. Very, very different. Because back then, families had much stronger social and emotional ties. We had multi-generational families, grandparents, even great-grandparents living with the children and everybody in the same house or very, very close to one another. We had communities that interacted. So when someone was sick or when someone was starting to go into the process where their life was ending, family and friends were available to help. A lot of us don't live in the same town where our families are. Or we may be moving around a lot and our friends are in other cities and all those kind of things. Children grew up familiar with death 100 years ago, very, very familiar, because they saw it happening all around them. They saw it happening in their own home. It wasn't tucked away in the sterile confines of a hospital. So people learned from each other how to grieve and how to cope. You may think back for yourself, but I remember my very first experience with death. I was probably 4 years old. I was thinking about it. When my great-grandmother died, she was my father's mother's mother, because we've got a whole collection of great-grandmothers. Anyway, and she died of natural causes in her daughter's house, my grandmother. Actually, she died in the same room where my grandmother had been born 70 years earlier. So it was that kind of continuity with it. And she was still in her bed. My mom and dad brought myself and my older sister over. You know, we only lived a couple miles away. And when they heard about it, we knew it was coming. She had been ill for a while. So we got over there, and it was just a couple hours after she had passed, and she was all laid out nicely in the little parlor off the sitting room off of the living room kind of a thing that these old houses had, and her hair was combed, and her eyes were closed, and her hands were nicely folded over there. And I was standing there, and my mother reached down, took my hand, and put it on her forehead. And it was cold as marble, and I freaked, absolutely, jumped, screamed, you know, whatever. But that's how people taught their children about death. They showed them that it was a perfectly normal process and nothing to be afraid of. And since that time, I've lost, as many of you have, all of my grandparents, obviously. I've lost my father, I've lost my youngest brother, and I've lost more friends than I can count through the years. But I'm sure that on some level, that experience at 4 years old helped me get through those things. It affected positively my experience of death. But today we're a lot more ignorant and naive about what the process is. And a lot of us don't have as much family around or emotional support. And a lot of people today don't have many spiritual beliefs either. I have people who call me and they don't have any sort of connection with a spiritual community. And they want me to do the memorial for someone, but they're kind of thrashing around. They think it's something they're supposed to do, but they don't have anybody to talk to about it. Okay? And finally, because our medical technology has become so advanced, we tend to see death as failure. We do. If someone dies, it's because the medical community couldn't do anything. So when we have to deal with it with someone we love, we don't handle it very well because all the emotions we feel are more intense than anything we've ever had to deal with before. They are. And if we haven't prepared ourselves somehow, and I'm talking about preparing ourselves at a spiritual level, we are not going to be able to understand how our mind, our body, our spirit, all these things need to work together because they feel like they're working against each other. And we're going to have a lot more difficult time going through it. So the first thing we need to do, and this is sort of the purpose of today, before something actually happens, which is why I'm talking about it today, is to get very clear about what this thing we call death is. And I just want to talk about that for a minute. I personally like what Robin Williams said. Anybody remember that? He said, death is nature's way of telling you your table is ready. I always thought that was good. At the most basic level, which is the level of awareness, the most basic spiritual level, we need to realize that death is not the end of life. It's a perfectly normal part of it, all right? So we need to see it as something that can happen anytime, any place, to us or to anyone else in our life. Now, a couple of you out there are thinking, everybody knows that. That's not that bright or whatever, you know, which is probably true. We all know this at an intellectual level. But we have got to know it even deeper than that. We've got to know it at the heart level, the soul level, the visceral level. We have to know that death is simply a part of life. Because when it does happen, it's going to appear to be happening on the physical level. On the dramatic, oh my God, how could this be happening kind of level. It's messy and it's unpleasant. Now, sometimes we may get a little advance warning. We may get a week, a month, a year, whatever it is. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes it comes very quietly in the middle of the night, as quiet as sleep, like our friend Scotchy last year, just quietly in his sleep. Sometimes it comes with a boom or a bang or a crash, whatever it happens to be. But I think everybody in here can agree that when it does happen, it's a big deal. Okay, it's a big deal to the person it happens to and to everyone around them. Okay, so we have to know the truth in here in spite of the drama that we see out there, what our eyes are seeing. I mean, it's kind of interesting. If you run the numbers, which I had to do, it's what I do. My wife will tell you this is what I do. I got thinking, how many people died today? All right, so I started running the figures and I based it on the 7 billion people population and average lifespan of about 75 years, and you know, all of the, and it came out to, how many do you think? 250,000 people a day on average. Didn't seem that many in a big scheme. You know, you got that many people on 285 on an average day, you know. 250,000 people on the planet who go on an average day from this world to the next in all sorts of different ways, but always with the same result. One moment they're alive, the next moment they're not. Every single one of them. So the reason we need to learn how to say goodbye and to learn how to do it well is because the longer we're here, the more likely we are to see people we love make their transition. So how we deal with it, which means how we remember them, how we forgive them if we need to forgive them for something they did, how we accept their passing, and how we move on, that will determine how well we are going to be able to live our life going forward and how well we are going to be able to unconditionally love the people who are still here, who are still here. That's what's important, not to mention the people that will come into our life in the future. Now, Kennedy Schultz, in his little book here, he makes a statement. He says, dying well is the last chapter of a well-lived life. Very, very interesting. He means the life that we're experiencing here, of course. So that means it doesn't need to be a painful experience, though sometimes our fear of being alone or whatever it happens to be can make it feel like that. We know that dying is not a punishment from God, because it happens to good people just as often as it happens to bad people. But when it happens to people we love, we may have feelings of blame. We may have even resentment directed towards whomever or whatever it happens to be that took the person we love from us. That's a natural reaction. And not surprisingly, when we lose someone, we go through the same 5 stages that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, the psychologist, talked about when we're facing our own death. So most of you know these, but it's important as a refresher that we do this periodically. These 5 phases. The first stage, when someone we love is diagnosed, or if they in fact pass quickly, is what? Who remembers? Denial. Denial, okay? We may deny that our friend or loved one is sick. If it happened really quickly, we may even deny that they're gone. Some people go that extreme, okay? Now, we're not talking about rational denial. Once again, this is not a head thing. It's a heart thing, all right? Because we can see with our own eyes what's happening. But there's something inside of us that has a hard time even imagining a world that doesn't have that person in it. There's something in us. So consciously or unconsciously, we start saying, whoa, we had plans here. You know, we had plans. We expected years to get, we saved for that trip that was coming. Our mind, when all these expectations get torn away from us, we're in shock. Our heart's in pain, but our brain hasn't caught up to it yet. Our brain hasn't caught up to it. We still want to change the unchangeable with logic. That's denial. But once we get past that, the second stage is bargaining. Okay, bargaining. All right, let's make a deal. I'll do anything. I'll stop smoking. I'll stop drinking. Take me instead. All these things. Of course, who are we bargaining with? God. But we're not arguing with God, the man upstairs who's doing all this stuff by moving his finger. We're arguing with life, and life never goes backwards, which is why we don't usually get what we want. So we next move into stage three, which is anger. Sometimes even worse, sometimes rage. And that's really a tough one because we're angry at our loved one for dying. We are. We're angry at ourselves for not loving them the way we should have while they were here. Sometimes we have that, okay? We're angry at God for taking them away from us. We've got all this anger. We're angry at our friends. We are, who try to tell us they know exactly how we feel. Nobody knows how I feel. This is different. I know 250,000 people a day go through this, but mine is different, okay? That's what we're saying, okay? And I'm never going to get over it either. Don't try to tell me that I will, all right? Because it hurts so much. Our heart's been torn out, crushed up, stomped on, slashed, burned, everything. So don't try to make me feel better. We feel like we're never going to be happy again. And that's when stage four comes in, which is depression. Depression. Deep, dark, heavy. But it doesn't happen while they die. It happens well after. It happens well after. That's what makes us. It happens after the flowers and the cards stop coming. It happens after our friends go back to their own lives. It happens after the world starts turning again, but we don't feel like we're in it because it's not the same anymore. All we can think about are the times we shared and how are we going to move on. But finally comes stage five, what I call the dawn, and that's acceptance. Acceptance. One day we wake up and the person that we loved the most and lost is not the first thing we think about. It may take a year, may take longer, but one morning we may get through a cup of coffee and a shower before we even think about it. Before we even think about it, okay? When we see their picture, we can actually smile instead of cry. That's when we start to know it. And that's when we're really finally able to say goodbye. And we need to do it in the only way we ever should say goodbye, which is with love. Let me talk about that. You see, when someone we love leaves us and we're not ready, because we're never ready, we're never ever ready, the feelings can be overwhelming. Fear, despair, anger, all the stuff I just went through. And all of those are perfectly normal reactions for a while. For a while. Now, no one can say how long, but they're not made to last forever. The pain is an important part of the healing process, but it's only a part. But it's only a part. There comes a time when we need to be able to stand in the center of our grief, sort of in the eye of the storm, and to feel whatever we need to feel. But somehow, eventually, we need to be able to reach inside to that center, to that core that we all have, and in that place to release their spirit, to something greater. Because that's what death is. Death is something greater. Death is life fulfilling its purpose, which is to carry us forward to something new and better. That's what it is. That's all it is. Okay? When the day comes that we are finally ready to say goodbye to someone we love, we want to be able to do it in a way that honors them and also honors us. You see, goodbye, we use that word all the time. It's not just a way to end a conversation. We're talking here about an honest and loving goodbye. And as Angela was saying earlier, saying goodbye needs to be a gift. It needs to be a gift of love that says we support their greater good wherever they go. The Spanish have a beautiful phrase. Sylvia, what is it? Vaya con Dios, right? Better than goodbye. Go with God. That's the kind of goodbye we're talking about. We're telling them from our heart, wherever they are, to go forth and to experience their spiritual path as we intend to experience ours moving forward. Now, Dr. Schultz writes this. He says, that's what love is all about, you know, a desire for good. Why would we say goodbye with anything less than love, with anything less than a desire for good for him or her, a desire for good for ourselves, and a desire for life to come to each of us that will hold more meaning than the life we had before? And having gone through Kennedy's last days with him, that's the way he lived. That's the way he lived. Of course, all of this brings us to the most important part. We can't talk about losing ones we love without talking about how we treat each other while we're alive. We can't, okay? Because that's what will determine our relationship with the people in our life, not only when the inevitable happens, but long after that. You see, what makes the whole process so difficult is we don't know when or how it's going to happen. It'd be a lot easier if we did. We don't know who's going to go first, which is extremely inconvenient for those of us who like to make plans and not have them interrupted. But like it or not, this is the way it is. We all have to live with the possibility that every conversation, every meal, every choice we make about anything, large or small, could be the last one we share with that person. With that person, okay? And that can be a very sobering thought, but it should also make us pay even closer attention to all the little decisions we make in our life that affect the people we love. Every single decision. Now, it doesn't mean we have to be fatalistic or frightened about everything and not let them go anywhere by themselves and all this kind of stuff. It just means we should pay closer attention to the way we treat the important people in our life because it may be the last opportunity to express what we feel. Even one thoughtless word can cause a lot of pain if you don't get the chance to take it back, to take it back. In my own case, when my father died 32 years ago, even though I wasn't there when he died, I can tell you right now with absolute certainty what the last words were that I said to my father. And they were, "I love you, Dad." Because those were the last words I said to him always when I left, when we had lunch together and I left. When I came back up to Atlanta, he was down in Tampa, whatever it is, okay? On the other hand, one of my younger brothers, the last experience with my father was an actual fist fight. And that affected him for the rest of his life. For the rest of his life. I don't have that. And I'm very, very grateful for that, okay? Whenever we talk about love, whatever the situation is, one of the things we have to agree on is, once again, as Angela was talking about so beautifully, is love is something we have to give freely all the time to everyone in our life. We also need to give them our attention and our respect and all those other things. But love also means letting them go when it's time for them to go. Now, if we give them all the love we can, that won't take any from us because there's an infinite amount of love that we have to give. But we have to let them go no matter how much we want them to stay, no matter how frightened we are about living by ourselves, no matter how lonely we think we're going to be, because only love heals. Only love heals. We have to know that. So saying goodbye with love is the only way to heal the pain and to make ourselves whole. Now, the healing will not happen immediately. Will not, but it will happen. We just have to trust in the process. Trust in the process. You see, our fear of living without them and all the things that go with that is not their problem. It's our problem. They're doing something else. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing, okay? So Dr. Schultz says it this way. I love it. He says, as we give freedom to those we love, we get it back as freedom from the fear of life without them. He says freedom from guilt over what we did or didn't do, freedom to pass out of our natural grief and into the natural inheritance of our relationship, which is more love than we ever had the thought, ever had or thought we were capable of. If we allow something inside of us to die when they pass on, we do them and ourselves a great disservice. We do. Sure, we're going to be sad for a while, but the greatest gift we can ever give to their memory, which is the part of them that's going to live forever in our heart, is to make sure that our life is even better because they were in it. Because they were in it. That's the greatest gift we can give. And not just our past life ideas, but our future life too. Or as a friend of mine once said of her husband, he had died a year before, and I called her on the first anniversary of her death to see how I was doing. And she said, well, he's a lot more portable now. So I take him with me wherever I go. Which was really, really beautiful. She wasn't talking about carrying his ashes. Okay, not a macabre thing. She was talking about her love for him that now fed and supported her growth as she created a new life for herself. For herself. She was talking about a love that helped her now to feel happy and at peace whenever she thought of him without it getting in the way of loving someone else in the future. Because love is not never mutually exclusive. Real love never is. Whether we're talking about a parent, a grandparent, a child, a friend, a partner, a spouse, whatever, when this one phase of life ends for them, while it continues for us, we need to be prepared. And the time to do that is now. No matter what may have happened between us in the past, we should tell them today and every day that we love them. Every single day that we love them. That'll set the stage. Then, when it does happen, we can be ready. We can be ready for the pain, ready for the sorrow, and ready for the sense of loss, but we can also be ready for the healing that will eventually take place when we realize that we didn't lose anything. Because the kind of love that is freely given and shared while we can do it face to face, but even afterwards, is never lost. Not even when someone dies. It only grows stronger. And that is their parting gift to us, for which we should be forever grateful. This is the truth in your life. And this is the truth in mine. And so it is.
And so it is.
All right. Heavy topic on a cold, rainy morning. Just what we need. Let's take a moment here. Come on up, Elaine. I know this brings up a lot of thoughts for all of us, some more than others, because it's more recent. But let's just take a moment for ourselves. And before I even start, I want you to picture someone who is no longer with us. Right now, in your mind, see their face, their smile. Feel their touch and feel how much they are still with you. They're not there physically, but they are just as real. We have a heart and a mind that is capable of remembering, and the memories that we have of those we loved need to be memories of love. Of the love we shared, of the love we felt, and anything that is not a part of that love, we need to set aside. Because life is love. Life at its most beautiful and wonderful is the feeling we have where we are close to someone, whether it's a spouse, a lover, a parent, a child, or a friend. It's all the same love. Because there's only one kind of love, and that is the love of God. And when we say the love of God, we aren't talking about loving some supernatural being. We're talking about loving as God loves. Because as we hear, God is love. That is the connection between those in our life who are important to us, whether they are here or whether they are gone. And that is the connection we will have with those who live on after us when we eventually make our transition. This entire process goes on every day, in every corner of the world. We can argue about our differences in terms of religion or race or gender or so many other things, but all of us are the same in this. We all are connected to people in our life in a special way. We all have people who are extremely important to us, who are a part of our life, and we are the part of life for them. So knowing that the separation that we see is purely a physical separation, we recognize the eternal connection that we all have with those we love. So knowing this, we give thanks. We give thanks for every moment that we have shared with the ones we love, whether they're here or gone. We give thanks for the ability to love beyond the physical. We give thanks for all the love that we have been given. And we give thanks for the opportunity to be here. Here in this beautiful thing we call life on this amazing planet, where love is the most important thing we share. Knowing this, I accept this truth for myself and everyone in this room and everyone everywhere. Knowing that these ideas go out from me and touch others and make the world a better place. This is my truth. I accept it. I embrace it. And I release it into consciousness, letting it be so. Join me in saying, amen.